All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we are diving deep, deep into one of the most, I think, well-known stories of all time, the Exodus from Egypt.
Yeah.
But we're not just like skimming the surface here.
Right.
We are going deep
Yeah.
and exploring this huge showdown between Yahweh, the God of Israel, and the gods of Egypt.
That's right.
You shared some really interesting sources on this, and I am so excited to dig in.
Well, it's a story that, continues to resonate even thousands of years later, and for good reason. The themes of power and freedom and faith really woven into the very fabric of this Exodus narrative.
Okay, so first things first, can we just take a sec to like really appreciate the historical context here? I
Yeah.
mean, we're talking about the Israelites enslaved in Egypt
No.
with pyramids already like all over the place. Can you imagine?
I know.
Like pyramids were ancient history even back then.
Yeah, it's a detail that often gets overlooked, but you think about it. The pyramids, these monumental structures, they were already centuries old when the Israelites even arrived.
That's crazy.
It just speaks volumes about how deep the roots of Egyptian culture were and the immense power of the pharaohs.
And speaking of ancient Egypt, the sources mentioned some really fascinating details about their culture.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
did you know that Egyptians practiced mummification?
Wow.
And they even had these specialized tables with drainage holes for the process.
Oh,
And
wow.
get this, they used mud bricks with straw for building, just like the Bible describes.
Yeah. It's just incredible how these little details just bring the story to life.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, the stage is set, right? We've
Yeah.
got the Israelites, longing for freedom, and
Right.
we've got Pharaoh, who basically just like scoffs at the idea of letting them go.
Right.
His response to Moses' request is essentially, "Who is Yahweh? Never heard of him. Like,
Right.
what kind of arrogance is that?"
Well, I think it's interesting because Pharaoh's dismissive question, who is Yahweh, becomes the central question that the entire Exodus narrative seeks to answer.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a challenge to Yahweh's authority, and the stage is set for this dramatic confrontation between the God of Israel and the gods of Egypt.
And
Yeah.
that's where the plagues come in, right?
That's right.
It wasn't just like these random acts of nature.
Right.
These were targeted events.
Yeah.
Almost like Yahweh was saying, "Okay, you want to know who I am? Let me show you."
That's one way to interpret it, yeah. But I'm curious, are there any other interpretations of the play's purpose that you found interesting in the research?
One source pointed out how the plagues like progressively challenged the very foundation of Egyptian society and religion.
Right.
Each plague seemed to target a specific Egyptian deity,
Oh, wow.
like turning the Nile to blood. That's a direct hit at Osiris, the god of the Nile and the underworld.
It's a fascinating observation because by targeting, the Egyptian gods in this way, Yahweh is essentially demonstrating his superiority over their entire pantheon. It wasn't just a contest of power, it was a declaration of his unique and unrivaled divinity.
And it wasn't just like symbolic either. The plagues had a devastating impact on the Egyptians. Imagine the economic chaos like caused by the hail destroying the barley harvest.
Oh, yeah.
It's like each plague strategically targeted a vital aspect of their
And
lives.
what's even more intriguing is that Egyptian magicians were initially able to replicate
What?
some of the plagues.
Really?
Yeah. Could this suggest that they unintentionally worsened the situation for their own people by, like, trying to match Yahweh's power?
Wow, I hadn't thought about it like that.
Yeah.
It adds a whole new layer of complexity to the story.
It really does.
He must have been so confusing for Pharaoh.
I know.
Like, was it his gods causing this chaos, or was it this unknown god, Yahweh?
Yeah, it's a question that highlights the tension between faith and doubt. The plagues created a kind of ambiguity for Pharaoh, and this ambiguity, in part, contributed to the hardening of his heart.
Okay, so let's talk about that. The hardening of Pharaoh's heart. It's a concept that can be so difficult to wrap our heads around.
I know.
Did God force Pharaoh to be stubborn,
Right.
or did Pharaoh make his own choices?
Right.
What did the sources say about this?
Well, one interesting point raised was that the biblical text uses three different Hebrew words for hardening, suggesting that it wasn't a simple black and white situation. It's not just about God's sovereignty versus Pharaoh's free will. It's a more nuanced interplay between the two.
So how do we reconcile like God's actions with Pharaoh's seemingly limited ability to choose.
Right.
Did you find any insights into this?
Well, one thought-provoking perspective suggested that Pharaoh's oppression of the Israelites,
yeah.
you know, his dehumanizing treatment of them,
right.
ultimately led to the hardening of his own heart.
Wow.
It's like a tragic cycle.
Yeah.
Where the very act of oppressing others
right.
diminishes our own capacity for empathy and compassion.
Mm.
In a way, the plagues could be seen as a form of, like, measure-for-measure judgment.
Right.
A consequence of Pharaoh's own choices.
That's a powerful and kind of unsettling idea.
It is.
It makes me think about how our actions, even like seemingly small ones, can have this ripple effect.
Yeah.
Shaping not only our own hearts, but like the world around us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Exodus narrative isn't just an ancient story.
Right.
It's a timeless reflection on human nature and power.
Yeah.
And the consequences of our choices.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
It really makes you think.
It does.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, very cool. So the plagues definitely answered Pharaoh's question about who Yahweh is.
Yeah.
But they also, like, served a much broader purpose,
oh,
right?
What?
These weren't just events contained to Egypt,
yeah.
but something that would, like, echo throughout history.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
The impact of the Exodus story extends far beyond the immediate events.
Yeah.
You know, we see it referenced throughout the Bible.
Yeah.
Shaping the understanding of God's power and justice, you know, for generations to come.
Yeah.
Future prophets and even Jesus himself.
You know, right.
They draw upon the imagery of the Exodus to convey these profound spiritual truths.
Yeah. And one source even pointed out a connection to the end times described in the book of Revelation.
Oh, wow.
With like the plagues and bowls of wrath.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how this ancient story like foreshadows events that are yet to unfold.
Yeah. It's a reminder.
Yeah.
That the Exodus isn't just a historical account.
Right.
It's a prophetic narrative.
Yeah.
That speaks to this ultimate victory of good over evil.
Right.
Of God's justice prevailing over the forces of darkness.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the plagues and their significance.
Yeah.
But what about Passover?
Yeah.
What new insights did you uncover about this pivotal event?
Well, one thing that really struck me was how Passover evolved over time.
Okay.
You know, initially the focus was very much on the lamb and its blood.
Right.
A tangible sign of God's protection and deliverance.
Right.
But later, you know, as we see in the annual celebration,
yeah.
the emphasis shifts to removing leaven.
Oh.
Which symbolizes sin. You know, it's a fascinating progression, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Passover becomes less about the external act of escaping Egypt.
Right.
And more about the internal process of purification.
That's a good way to put it.
Did the sources connect this to any other biblical teachings?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, think about Jesus' teachings on the leaven of the Pharisees.
Right.
You know, their hypocrisy.
Right.
Or Paul's exhortation to, you know, remove sin from the church.
Right.
It all ties together beautifully,
you know,
highlighting this ongoing need for inner transformation.
Right.
For removing those things that
yeah.
hinder our spiritual growth.
It makes you think about what leaven represents in our own lives, you know,
yeah.
those things we need to like let go of to
yeah.
truly experience freedom.
Precisely.
Yeah.
True freedom isn't just about escaping external oppression.
Right.
It's about being set free from this internal bondage of sin.
Right.
And embracing that transformative power of God's grace.
That's a powerful thought.
It is.
Okay, so the Israelites are finally free. They've experienced the miracle of the Red Sea crossing.
Right.
And they're heading towards the Promised Land.
Yes.
But of course, the journey doesn't end there.
That's right.
You know, their experience in the wilderness adds a whole new layer to the Exodus story.
It does. It's in the wilderness that the Israelites face a new set of challenges.
Right.
You know, challenges that force them to confront their fears, their doubts.
Yeah.
And their dependence on God.
And it wasn't exactly a short trip.
No.
40 years?
40 years.
Like, what stood out to you about this period of wilderness wandering?
Well, first, I think it's important to acknowledge that
yeah.
40 years is a significant number in the Bible.
Okay.
It often represents a time of testing,
yeah.
purification, and preparation.
Mm.
You know, think about Noah's flood, right?
Yeah.
Lasting 40 days and nights.
Right.
Or Jesus's 40 days in the wilderness.
Yeah.
These periods of time, they signify a profound transformation.
So the wilderness wasn't just a geographical location.
Right.
It was like a spiritual crucible.
Yeah.
Like a place where the Israelites were stripped down to their core.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
The wilderness is where their faith was tested.
Right.
Where they learned to trust God's provision, even when it seemed scarce.
Right.
And where they discovered the true meaning of freedom.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about escaping Egypt.
Right.
It was about embracing a new identity.
Right.
A new way of life centered on their covenant relationship with Yahweh.
Right.
Yeah.
And part of that new identity involved becoming a nation governed by law, right?
Yes.
That's where Mount Sinai comes in, the
right.
place where God reveals himself in this dramatic way,
right.
shaking the very mountain as he speaks the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, the giving of the law at Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
This marks a pivotal moment in the Israelites' journey.
Right.
It's the moment they transition from freed slaves to a covenant people.
Right.
Bound to Yahweh by law and ritual.
Yeah.
It's the establishment of a foundation for a just and righteous society.
So the Ten Commandments weren't just like random rules, but a blueprint for how to like live in right relationship with God and with each other.
That's right.
You know, it covered everything from worshiping the one true God to honoring parents, respecting property.
It's fascinating how the Ten Commandments are structured. You know, the first four commandments.
Yeah.
They focus on the Israelites' relationship with God.
Right.
While the remaining six.
Yeah.
They address their relationships with one another.
Oh.
It underscores this interconnectedness.
Yeah.
Of our spiritual and social lives.
So it's not just about worshiping God in isolation, but about living out our faith in how we treat others.
That's right.
And how we like build a just and compassionate society.
Yeah. I mean, these values are still relevant today, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Ten Commandments have influenced legal systems and ethical frameworks throughout history, you know,
yeah.
shaping our understanding of justice and responsibility and human dignity.
But even with these like clear guidelines,
yeah.
the Israelites weren't exactly perfect law keepers in the wilderness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was that whole golden calf incident.
Oh, yeah.
Like, guys, you just witnessed God's power at Mount Sinai. And now you're worshiping a statue made of gold.
Right.
Like, what were they thinking?
It's a stark reminder of human weakness, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Now, it reveals our tendency to stray from God's path.
Right.
Even after experiencing, you know, his miraculous deliverance.
Right.
It seems that, you know, they yearned for something tangible,
right.
something they could, you know, see and touch.
Right.
Even if it meant turning away from the God who had liberated them.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a powerful reminder that faith isn't just this like one-time event,
yeah.
but this ongoing journey, this constant choice
right.
to trust God, yeah. even when we don't understand his ways.
Exactly.
What did the sources have to say about the significance of the golden calf incident?
Well, one interpretation suggested that the golden calf represented you know, the Israelites' desire for security
right.
and stability.
Hmm.
Their longing for a familiar form of worship that resembled, you know, the gods of the cultures they'd been exposed to.
Right.
You know, they were essentially creating a god in their own image.
Oh, wow.
One that fit into their preconceived notions of what a deity should be.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a cautionary tale for us today, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It challenges us to examine our own lives.
Right.
To identify those golden calves that we might be clinging to, you know, those things we prioritize over our relationship with God.
Yeah. What are our modern day idols?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What distractions like prevent us from fully surrendering to God's will?
Right.
These are questions worth reflecting on.
They are.
So we've got the law. We've got the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
But forming a new nation in the wilderness wasn't just about rules, right?
That's right.
There was also the like practical matter of building a society, establishing systems of justice, social structures,
yeah.
essentially like creating a whole new way of life.
And it's important to remember that these were people who had been enslaved for generations.
Right.
They had no experience with self-governance.
Right.
You know, no framework for resolving disputes or making collective decisions.
Right.
It's a fascinating challenge.
Yeah,
know?
It is.
How do you take a group of freed slaves and transform them into a self-governing nation?
It sounds like a recipe for chaos.
It does, doesn't it?
What insights did the sources offer into this process?
Well, one thing that stood out was the role of delegation and collaboration.
Okay.
You know, Moses, with God's guidance, he established a system of judges and elders
right.
to help him govern the people.
Okay.
He realized he couldn't do it all himself.
Right.
He needed to empower others and share the responsibility of leadership.
It's a principle that's still so relevant today, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Yeah, the importance of building teams, sharing leadership, yeah. And recognizing that no one person can do it all.
Exactly.
So even though they had God's law
right.
and Moses's leadership,
right.
the Israelites' journey through the wilderness wasn't exactly smooth sailing, was it?
No, it wasn't.
What were some of the challenges that they faced?
Well, one thing that's clear is that the Israelites struggled with complaining.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they grumbled about the food, the water, the leadership.
Oh, yeah.
You name it, they complained about it.
That's so relatable, right?
I know. It's easy to judge their negativity, but, you know, it's also important to consider the trauma they had endured.
Right.
You know, generations had lived under this, oppressive system of slavery.
Right.
And even though they were free, they were still carrying the scars of their past.
Right.
You know, they were entering a new and uncertain future.
Yeah.
And it's understandable that they would struggle with, fear, anxiety, and doubt. You know, the wilderness journey, it was a process of healing.
Yeah.
Of learning to trust God's provision.
Right.
And of letting go of those ingrained habits of fear and dependence.
Right.
That had been instilled in them during their time in Egypt.
Right.
It was a long and difficult process.
Yeah, it was.
But it was essential for their transformation into a people.
Yeah.
You know, capable of inheriting the promised land.
So despite, like, the complaining and the challenges, mm-hmm. there were also moments of incredible beauty and spiritual growth in the wilderness. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We see God's faithfulness shining through in how he provides for their needs.
Right.
Protects them from enemies.
Right.
And guides them towards the promised land. Their journey, with all its ups and downs,
right.
it's a testament to God's unwavering love and commitment to his people.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, we've been talking about the Israelites' journey through the wilderness.
Yeah.
And it's so clear that it wasn't just about, like, physical survival, you know.
Right, right, okay.
It was about spiritual formation, about yeah. learning to, like, trust God in the face of uncertainty.
Their wilderness experience serves as such a powerful metaphor for our own lives, don't you think?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
We all face seasons of testing, you know, right. times when we feel lost or just, you know, uncertain about the path ahead.
Yeah.
The Israelites' journey reminds us that even in those wilderness moments,
right.
God is present,
yeah.
you know, providing for our needs, guiding our steps, and just like shaping us into the people he intends us to be.
Absolutely.
It makes you wonder,
yeah.
what were some of the like key lessons they learned during those 4 years of wandering?
Yeah.
What insights did you find in the sources that we can like apply to our own lives?
Well, one recurring theme was the importance of letting go.
Mm.
The Israelite, they had to let go of their old ways of thinking, you know,
right.
their ingrained habits of fear and dependence
right.
that had been shaped by their experience in Egypt.
Right.
They had to embrace this new identity.
Yeah.
A new way of life based on their covenant relationship with Yahweh.
It's like they were being stripped down to their core.
Yeah.
Forced to confront their deepest fears and insecurities.
Right.
They had to learn to, like, rely on God in a way they never had before.
Precisely.
Yeah.
The wilderness was a place of vulnerability.
Yeah.
Of exposure.
Right.
Where they had to face their limitations.
Yeah.
And surrender to God's provision.
Yeah.
It was a process of refining their faith.
Right.
Of learning to trust God's guidance, even when the path ahead seemed unclear.
And it wasn't just about individual transformation, right?
Right.
This was also like a time of leadership development.
Yeah.
A time for Moses to prepare the people for the challenges that lay ahead.
Moses' leadership during the wilderness journey is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
He had to, you know, navigate these complex interpersonal dynamics, resolve disputes,
right.
interpret God's law,
yeah.
and inspire a new generation to embrace their destiny.
Right.
He faced moments of, you know, doubt, frustration,
yeah.
and even anger.
And of course, there was that incident where he struck the rock instead of like speaking to it as God had commanded,
right.
a moment of anger that cost him the opportunity to enter the promised land.
Yeah, what a poignant lesson in leadership.
It's a reminder that even the greatest leaders are human, prone yeah. to mistakes.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, how we respond to those mistakes
right.
that truly defines our leadership.
That's a good point.
Moses' example teaches us the importance of humility,
yeah,
obedience,
right,
and controlling our emotions, even in the face of adversity.
It also highlights the importance of accountability, doesn't it?
For sure.
Even Moses, you know, the man who spoke face to face with God,
yeah,
was held responsible for his actions.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a principle that applies to leaders in all spheres of life.
So as Moses's time of leadership grew to a close, a new leader emerged.
Right.
Joshua, chosen by God to lead the Israelites into the promised land.
Yeah.
Joshua, like, embodies the courage, the faith, the determination of this new generation.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful picture of God's faithfulness
in
raising up new leaders to carry on his work.
The transition from Moses to Joshua reminds us that that God's plans extend beyond our individual lifetimes, you know.
Right.
We each play a part in his grand narrative.
Yeah.
And he equips us for the specific tasks he calls us to.
Right.
Sometimes that involves passing the baton to others, you know,
yeah,
trusting that God will continue his work through them.
And finally, after 40 years of wandering, the Israelites reach the promised land.
Yes.
It's the culmination of their, like, their long journey, you know, a testament to God's faithfulness and the fulfillment of his covenant promises.
It's a powerful moment.
But even as they entered this new land, their journey wasn't over.
Right.
What insights did the sources offer about this this new phase?
Well, one perspective suggested that the Promised Land wasn't just a geographical destination, but a symbol of God's blessing and provision.
Okay.
A place where they could, you know, experience abundance and flourish as a nation.
Right.
But it wasn't a place of passive rest.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place where they would continue to grow.
Yeah.
To face new challenges.
Right.
And to live out their faith in tangible ways.
It's like that saying, the Promised Land is not a place, it's a process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that process, it involves ongoing challenges, the need for you know, constant reliance on God's guidance, and the commitment to building a just and compassionate society.
Right.
The Israelites' journey, even after entering the Promised Land, you know, it reminds us that the Christian life is a pilgrimage. A continuous journey of growth, discovery, and dependence on God.
So what have we learned from our deep dive into the Exodus?
Yeah, it's a story that it continues to resonate even thousands of years later.
Yeah.
Offering insights into God's character, our human nature, and this this ongoing journey of faith.
We've seen God's power on full display.
We have.
His faithfulness to his promises.
Yes.
His heart for the oppressed.
Absolutely.
We've explored the transformative power of the wilderness.
Right.
The importance of leadership.
Yeah.
And the ongoing process of becoming the people God intends us to be.
You know, if the Exodus is ultimately a story about liberation.
Yeah.
About moving from slavery to freedom.
Right.
It invites us to reflect on our own lives.
Yeah.
You know, what chains do we need to break free from?
That's a good question.
What promises is God calling us to embrace?
Mm.
What wilderness experiences are shaping us into the people he desires us to be?
These are such good questions to think about.
Yeah.
Questions that can lead us to a deeper understanding of God and ourselves.
That's right.
Well, thanks for joining us on this incredible journey through the Exodus.
That's been great.
May its lessons inspire and challenge you as you continue your own journey of faith.